This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. QSR has always been an interesting and very active sector for digital signage, with chain restaurant operators being early adopters of the technology for menu displays. But the pandemic has shifted digital screens from being a better, more cost-efficient way to manage menus to being mission-critical to many operations, particularly when in-store ordering and dining was shut down in many places and the only way to do business was in the drive-thru lane. Global Display Solutions, which makes outdoor displays for situations like drive-thrus, had an online panel session recently that explored the digital transformation of QSR. I was asked to moderate, a job that was made easy because I had really great panelists. Along with Robert Heiss of GDS, I chatted with Jackie Walker of Publicis Sapient, Dana Stotts of ARC Worldwide, and Jeff Hastings, the super smart CEO of BrightSign. There was no presentation to sit through first, so what you have is the audio version of the session, which is about 60 minutes of insights on what's happening with digital signage and QSR. In short, there's lots. All right, welcome everyone. Thanks for joining us today to get some insights on digital transformation in the QSR industry and beyond. I'm Dave Haynes of 69, and I'll be your moderator for this session. If you don't know about 69, what's wrong with you? It's a no BS, lots of snark publication focused squarely on the digital signage sector. It's been around for about 15 years, and you get free access to about 8,000 news and opinion pieces. Drive-thru has been a part of QSR since I was a little kid, so it's been around for roughly forever. But 2021 saw drive-thru shift from being a great add-on and amenity for restaurants to being mission critical. Drive-thru saved a lot of QSR operations, and it's made a lot of QSRs that focused on indoor dining take a look at adding drive-thru to it just because they needed to. This session is not going to be like a lot of webinars with a bunch of decks to present. It's much more of a panel, and we have some great people on it. Let's meet the panelists. The host is Robert Heiss of Global Display Solutions, or GDS. Robert, you want to give the rundown on yourself?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Dave. Our company, Global Display Solutions, GDS, is a display manufacturer. We're headquartered out of Europe, but we are based here in the U.S. out of Rockford, Illinois, just west of Chicago. And we do a lot of specialty displays for indoor and outdoor and are particularly focusing on the drive-thru because of the reliability that's needed for the outdoor displays. So I'm the EVP and General Manager of GDS.
Great. We have Jackie Walker of Sapient Publicis. Jackie?
Hi. I've been with Sapient for just over 12 years. Sapient, for those of you who don't know it, is the digital business transformation hub of Publicis Group, the massive media holding company. So we really focus squarely on delivering value to our customers' businesses through digital. I'm part of the dining and delivery practice. I'm the lead strategist in that group, and I also am the product owner for our premise digital signage CMS.
Right. Jeff Hastings of BrightSign.
Hi, Jeff Hastings. I'm the CEO of BrightSign. I've basically been the CEO since we spun out from Roku in 2010. And our primary focus is building solid-state media players. And we're currently the worldwide brand leader in media players for the digital signage industry.
All right. And last but not least, of course, Dana Stotts of ARC Worldwide.
Hello, everyone. Dana Stotts. I'm a business lead at ARC Worldwide. And we are also part of the Publicis Group. We are the commerce engine of the Publicis Group that we like to create irresistible solutions for our clients. And I've been at ARC for over 10 years and been part of the retail QSR business for all going on 25. So looking forward to the good discussion today.
So, all right, let's get this started. Robert Heiss, what's going on in QSR right now? I get a sense that the pandemic has changed many, many things for that industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it last year we saw so many of the restaurant brands rely almost solely on drive-through. And I think it really showed many of these brands that if they didn't have drive-through, they were not going to get a lot of revenue. So I think it it put a big importance on it. So what we're seeing right now and what we've been seeing through the last half of last year is that there are not only a lot of brands that haven't had traditional drive-through looking to implement them within new store designs, but we're also seeing other industries outside of normal quick service, convenience stores, grocery stores, pharmacies looking to add drive-through in because they know that's going to be a quick and easy way. And people have been getting used to that, just like they've been getting used to these Zoom meetings.
And this is, this has been a tough sell historically, right? Just because of the cost of outdoor displays.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be an ROI. And I think as we talk further with this discussion, we'll learn about how that ROI is being driven from not just showing images of your products or possibly just a static menu replacing static with digital, but actually utilizing the system to drive customer experience.
So Jackie, there's a lot more to drive-through and drive-through displays than just showing the menu, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the most exciting things for us in the way that our customers are approaching drive-through is that they're really starting to think about the ways that digital comes to life in the drive-through. So thinking about mobile, a higher percentage of their customers actually using their mobile apps, and starting to think about how do they do things like reinforce loyalty programs or just, you know, fulfill people who are coming through who have already mobile ordered ahead, right? So it's kind of a convergence point for a lot of interesting things that are happening.
So if you're a global restaurant brand, this idea of doing data integration, using mobile apps and everything else is probably second nature. You have digital departments and all that. But there's another level down, the guys who aren't the McDonald's and the Wendy's and Burger King's and so on that still have pretty substantial chains. Can they do this sort of thing or do they have to like sub it out or like how big of a job is this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a big job, right? That's really clear. There are a lot of elements and there are a lot of parts of the organization that need to be involved for it to be successful. I think what's really great is for the smaller brands, you know, there is a little bit less complexity. If you think about McDonald's with 14,000 locations, you know, Burger King has 7,200. There's a lot of the energy that goes into digital menu boards is like the life is sucked out of it by the complexity of rollout at scale. Whereas if you're talking about a couple hundred locations, those things can not take a backstage, but are a little bit less of a concern and an energy suck. And you can focus on the customer experience. I do think that a lot of those organizations do need to heavily rely on partners in a way that some of the larger organizations might not need to because they have some of those capabilities in-house.
And there are absolutely partners who can help out on this sort of thing, right?
A couple on this call, I think. Yeah, absolutely. I think what's really interesting to me is, you know, when you look at digital menu boards, they're still kind of thought of as like a SKU that's being purchased, right? Like even the name digital menu board implies that it is a physical object. So I think sometimes it's purchased, you know, through procurement or a restaurant ops led view of the world, which is fine. But when you start to think about how you get ROI out of it, how you deliver value, you really need to, you know, engage marketing, engage technology, and engage marketing to make these initiatives really successful.
And Dana, you talked about when we were talking ahead of this about the consumer journey that is not just the, you know, item and price on a display and you're done. There's you're having to think about a whole bunch of different things about how you engage shoppers and develop loyalty, make them want to come back again, all that sort of thing.
Yep. Yeah. It's so important. And just and not just in QSR, but in everything. But for QSR specifically in the drive-through, it's the mobile interaction, especially over the last year with all the order ahead and then pick up in, either in-store or in the drive-through. But even outside of the main board and leveraging the drive-through preview signs, and being really strategic and you know, and Jackie and I and our capabilities in terms of like the content strategy and the software and then what goes on there. Like that's, it's so important for us to be on the same page and focus like in the preview boards of those are where you, new items, upsell, things like that. Be really strategic about what you show when maybe a guest is sitting in line for a bit. Cause when they get to the board, it's got to be about throughput and speed and they, you know, making it easy for the guest to make the navigate the board and make the choice. That's so important. And then while they're there, it's the upsells. It's not them defaulting to what they always get. How do you create the board and the content to where it really does drive discovery and upsell?
I'm going to guess that in a lot of cases for restaurant operators who are unfamiliar with all this, when you raise an idea like content strategy, they probably look at you cross-eyed because like I'm putting a menu on a screen instead and that's it, right?
For sure. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, and you know, you mentioned can smaller operators and chains do this and as it compares to like the Burger Kings and McDonald's. When it comes to the content and what goes on the board, it really is the foundational elements are the same in terms of identifying your objectives, developing the strategy to achieve those objectives, and then some simple key tenets of the design to make sure that you're making it as easy as possible for the guests to navigate the board.
I can't tell you how many times we've had customers come in think we need a digital sign outside, but haven't given one thought to what they're going to show on it. And in some cases, right. They can sit out there just maybe rotating a few of the images. And you know, in the industry, we say content is king, which I would agree with. Content is very important, but you can't have content without a good delivery system. So that's where the display, uh-huh. The media players, that bright sign that Jeff will talk about become really important because you need a good way to distribute it. But that content strategy is so important. It needs to be thought of well before the deployment. Doing it at the deployment, sure, it's fine. You can always play tests and do different things. But the real value of the outdoor menu board is in how you're delivering content to the customer, what you're showing them, and ultimately how you're changing behavior because you want to increase your sales, you want to upsell and all of those kinds of things.
Right.
Go ahead, Jeff.
And I think when you start thinking about the digital menu board, it's always been positioned as a very functional thing. I need to present a menu so that someone can order. And when you move to digital, it really is no longer, oh, I need a content strategy. You really need an experience strategy. You know, you've got people, lines are long, and you've got to figure out a strategy that gives an experience to the user that really is going to hit all of the things that you're looking for. One, it's got to be functional. I mean, people are ordering there. Two, you've got to be able to have promotions, introduce new items, and that has to be all seamlessly integrated to make sure that you have a good workflow. Now, the reality is we're all sitting here saying, oh my gosh, we've got all these great ideas. The reality is these digital menu boards are evolving entities. They grow, they expand, they morph over time. So what we've seen as one of the critical pieces of a digital menu board is putting in a platform, an awesome display, a media player that can handle different things over time and expand to different inputs, and a core content back end that can change and morph with time. A lot of people think, I'm just buying this at the beginning and it's going to go for a long time. The reality is it's going to morph and change over time. And as the discussion goes on, you'll see all the different angles that go there. But when you're putting in the initial investment, the key thing is to make sure you have this overall platform from a software backend to a media player to displays, the infrastructure, so that it can be updated and morph over time.
I couldn't agree more. I think sometimes what happens is clients get so super focused on, again, the complexity of physical installation, right? They think about, we have this big project, which is deploying digital menu boards. So we're going to do all of that work, the construction work, the procurement work, the permitting, they get everything installed. And they take for granted that the software capability is going to appear. And two, the experience is going to appear. So I think sometimes what happens for clients in that position is when they're actually speccing the hardware that they're going to install, they underestimate the needs that are going to arise when they get to that experience strategy. So sitting in my seat, it's easy to say this, but I think starting with the experience that you want to deliver first and foremost is really important so that you can ensure that you are buying the hardware and the software that's going to support that vision. And to Jeff's point, grow with you. It's not about what you want to do today or what you are doing today. It's what are you going to be wanting to do in 5 years from now? And looking at, you know, your mobile roadmap, your overall business roadmap, and how does drive-through dovetail into all of that? It's a little more complex than just buying a screen.
Absolutely. I mean, Jeff, we've specced in your players, and we've talked to the customer about, are you going to want to do video in the future? And if so, how is that going to impact the style of player that you're going to need? With our displays, we talk about the ability to service the display over a 10-15 year period and possibly even switch over to some additional components and add additional functionality in that they may not need today, but it gives them that flexibility in the future.
Going outside with the display in drive-through, whether it's for menus or pre-sell, it's a hell of a lot more complicated than the ones that you're putting inside up above the counter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In the old days, you know, they used to create these air-conditioned boxes and put an indoor display inside, and it was loud, it was power-hungry, and if the air conditioning failed, the displays failed. We've gone from the mindset of a display that is fully functional out of the box in the worst weather, whether it's in Montreal in the cold winters there, or all the way down in Cancun, Mexico, or in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Anywhere there, these displays are running and able to manage themselves through a passive thermal management system. And it's important to be able to get displays that have that capability and that even can monitor themselves so that they can last for that period of time to manage the ROI.
And Jeff, I'm curious, as a technologist, how would a QSR operator, whether they work for IT within the QSR chain or whatever it may be, how do they figure out all the technology sides of this? Because if you're buying indoor displays, you could take a look at the display, looks nice, color reproduction is good and everything else, good, good, good. But you can have outdoor displays look pretty darn good on a trade show floor, but they're not going to last because of the way they're engineered, the way the airflow is handled and everything else, right? How does a newbie figure that out?
Well, I think as both, you know, look at it from all the aspects, you have the IT side. How am I going to manage these things? Because you can't reach out and touch them. There's no one at the facility that's going to be able to help you, quote, fix them. I mean, quote, fixing them means sending someone out there if there's some problem. So how do you put in the infrastructure to be able to monitor that? So that's from the IT side. And there's a lot of tools and things built into that. The next one is just the physical ability of this device that you're putting in to withstand the elements. And, you know, as Robert was talking about, you know, the displays moving from this world of like, we're going to put an indoor display outside and build a conditioning box for it. It's just not sustainable to do that, because as soon as one element fails, that whole thing goes down. And now you've got a pile of junk sitting in your drive-through. And then also, as you move to this technology to withstand the elements, it's looking at each individual component to make sure that they can withstand it. You know, what is the operating ranges outside? And if you look at that, you know, as Robert said, going from, you know, Cancun, Mexico to, you know, your great white north that you have on your background, the temperature ranges are dramatic, and you will experience those. And you'll even experience those kind of in that middle land back there in the middle of the United States, because it, with the thermal exposure on the case of these things, it can actually increase the temperature inside to be dramatic. It can be up 60, 70 degrees C inside that enclosure. So even though we don't think about those extremes in the middle, you have to do that. So that's the second one. And then the last part of it is how are you going to have the software and the IT, not just the IT for managing these, whatever kind of devices they are, you know, being able to get diagnostics on the screen, getting diagnostics about the media player, just the core maintenance of it. You've then got the software infrastructure to be serving all the content and picking that back in. So those are all the things you've got to put just to make sure that you have the infrastructure that you can maintain. Once you've got that in place, then you can start figuring out the experiences and all these other fun things about it. But if you don't put that core infrastructure in place, you're going to have a system that you're just going to struggle with.
I think one of the things that's important when I work with customers, especially bigger customers, is they often split their technology groups into two pieces, right? There's the restaurant technology group, which worries about all of the infrastructure in the restaurant. So point of sale, you know, kitchen management systems. Digital displays usually get lumped under that category because they live in the store. But then you have this whole other organization, which is the customer technology side. So they're the folks who are worried about content management, about websites, about mobile apps, usually about loyalty. And I think what's challenging is sometimes when it gets when digital menu boards get siloed under the restaurant technology groups, you're not planning the right way for those integrations to the customer tech side. So I think that's one of the things that brands are still really figuring out is how do you think about the connection between both of those? To Jeff's point, how do you make sure you're managing and operating it as part of your restaurant infrastructure in sustainable ways at scale? But then on the customer experience side, how are you planning ahead for those robust integrations that are going to provide the experience that delivers the most value to both you and your customers?
So I'm a restaurant operator. I've been largely locked down for many months now. I'm thinking of reopening because things are getting better. Dana, who should be in the initial planning meetings? Which functions?
Well, I'm the content marketing guy, so definitely the marketing folks. But I think to Jackie's point, it's how you bring those two groups together. So like the IT team from the restaurant perspective, but then that customer and guest experience team, because in our world, we can come up with all the great ideas and the different ways to take advantage of the technology that's out there, from suggestive selling to dayparting and taking advantage of just having a digital menu board. Like that in and of itself, from a marketing perspective, just opens up so many opportunities to messaging to the guests and things like that, and day parting, and even testing. I think, you know, we haven't really talked about that much, but like being able to test a new initiative or how promotions show up, things like that easily in certain markets is such an important piece of this. And so kind of having a representative from all sides of the business, from a marketing perspective, from an operations perspective, from an IT perspective, that allows, again, to Jackie's point, that allows everyone to have a seat at the table to make sure that whatever the technology is that the operators are investing in, that we can take full advantage of it.
And you can add data and analytics to the party too, right? I think those folks that are doing guest intelligence work in the front end, and then all of the data analytics to actually understand what is being displayed and how it relates to what's being purchased, I think that is an area where there's a tremendous amount of growth for the industry, frankly.
Couldn't agree more, Jackie. And it's a great point, because that even informs where things from a content perspective and how things and items show up on a board. And we take all that into consideration: average sales per week, profit margin per item. What's your hot zone? What are the things that you need to show on the menu, but you really don't want guests buying because they don't make you a lot of money? Let's tuck those in the top right-hand corner. So all of those things make a difference and impact how we think about what shows up on the board and where.
And how easy or hard is it to start to tie into other restaurant systems, like the system that manages pricing, the systems that manage inventory, staffing, all those sorts of things that may be able to be part of informing what's on that screen?
So I will say it depends. And the reason I say it depends is because
it does.
I mean, different brands, you know, have different situations when it comes to point of sale, like very specifically. That's usually kind of the key first system that you have to get tightly integrated with. Some brands like McDonald's are, you know, mandated every single location is using the same exact point of sale. And so maybe you have a couple of versions that you're dealing with, but everything is managed, you know, via corporate. You look at other operations like Burger King, and there's much more flexibility given to franchisees. which means there are multiple point of sale systems running, right? And so I think what's really important is to go in with eyes open about what your specific situation is, right? If you're a smaller brand, you have 200 locations, everybody's using the same system, then it's a simpler conversation, right? Because you just have to worry about one vendor and make sure that you're accounting for that properly. But you need to be real if you have multiple systems running and really think about how are you going to manage and maintain that. The more systems, the more complexity.
And the key really is making sure that you have the integration or you have a roadmap to the integration. You know, a lot of times people move forward the effort and you don't want to, you know, have everything have to be there on day one. So by going through this and putting a roadmap together, okay, what's the absolute minimal integration? Okay, the point of sale. We've got to make sure that someone's not having to retype the order. Okay, good. Let's get there and then move forward with other integrations that can add a lot of value to it. So, you know, as I talked about earlier, having a platform that can grow, it's on all aspects from, you know, simple integration with the point of sale system all the way up to more complex integration with, you know, different marketing programs, maybe even the loyalty program, the, you know, your web assets, all those things over time you want integrated so that, you know, from the marketing side, you can have integrated marketing. You have a new item. It's going to flow through the digital menu boards. It's going to flow through the websites.
Yeah, I think that's important also in terms of the integration with the hardware. And I think that's where we've had a project, some projects with Jackie's group at Publicis Sapient, where they've actually built in the monitoring and integration of Jeff's hardware and the Bright Signs and with the GDS displays all within that one package. So that all then can be monitored and maintained without having to go to multiple different systems.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Jackie made a reference to franchise operators, and I wonder, in terms of this early planning, who's at the table? In my understanding, in a lot of cases with QSRs, is the head office, the chain, may make recommendations or mandate what technologies to use and all that, but it's going to be the franchise owner who's going to have to spend the money to do this. So how do you get them on board and kind of signed off on what could be a pretty substantial technology investment?
So it's, to me, it is 100% about ROI, right? How do you make the case for ROI? I think in the, you know, in the initial days, early days of digital menu boards, it was all about cost reduction, right? So the frame was, we're going to have less printing costs. You store manager are not going to have somebody getting up on a ladder, liability, crew is distracted doing all these manual tasks. Remember those menu boards with like the stickers for the price? Like somebody's putting all those stickers on, you know? So there was this frame around cost savings. I think now we're moving to that next level where technology can enable incrementality. And that's a word we use with our clients all the time. It's like, how do you get more out of each transaction with each customer? Now, the thing that's interesting there is that I think that the corporate side has much more power in being able to impact customers in ways that leverage sophisticated technology because they have one, bigger budget, and two, much more data, right? And so data is the thing that sits under this. So if you think about what a brand can do, it's much more sophisticated than what an individual franchise operator can do. So I think that's something to just kind of keep in mind. And, you know, we see things in the industry that come from both origin points, right? If you look at McDonald's, of course, that's all coming from corporate. And they're very highly complex. I mean, they probably have what is installed today is the most complicated implementation from a software technology standpoint out there. But then you have brands like Arby's, where a lot of the menu boards you see out in the field are are deployed by the franchisees, right? They're like these, I won't call them rogue, but you know, they're operators that feel that it's worthwhile to make that investment. But the capabilities they get access to are, you know, it's a subset.
I think there's also some advantage as well that, you know, there's a lot of good ideas that do come out of the franchisees that sometimes don't make it up into corporate. And I think that flow back and forth, we worked with the idea on the face-to-face video at the drive-through, so that you would be talking face-to-face even before FaceTime was a thing, where, you know, you'd have a camera also inside the store and the crew member. And we all know that cameras at the drive-through on the driver really help with order accuracy, because not only do you hear them, but you can see their lips. But I think it's also providing similar from when you're watching who you're giving the order to on the screen. And then at the same time, also being able to have a little bit more of a friendly banter, possibly recognizing, hey, you're the order taker from yesterday and the crew member from yesterday. And that's what really Starbucks, that's what drove them to do the digital drive-through from the very beginning, was really that customer experience, that tie-in with the baristas.
There has to be a bit of a delicate balance though, right? Because you can't get too interactive with your customers or give them too many options, because a lot of this is also about throughput, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it always comes back to throughput. Yes. I think the way I like to frame it is it's all about giving your customers confidence, right? If your customers are asking questions in the drive-through, you're in trouble, right? So if they have a coupon and they don't understand how that's going to work, there's some deal that they don't understand or they don't see on the menu board, there's a product that used to be there and it's not now. Like, as soon as you start to have those level of communications between the crew member and the customer, you're slowing down your speed, right? So I think of menu boards, digital menu boards, as a tool to provide that reinforcement to the customer that they're getting what they expect. So you think about like the order displays, it's all about you as the customer seeing that the crew member is putting in the thing that you said, right? You know that they heard no pickles the first time you said it, because it's showing you no pickles right on the board. Same with loyalty. I think this is a huge move around digital menu boards and loyalty, is how do you communicate to customers that they're earning points the way that they expect to, or, you know, the redemption for a free coffee that they applied in the app, they're actually getting that in the transaction. I think the digital menu board has just this huge, relatively untapped opportunity to provide just a very heightened level of confidence and reassurance to the customer that you understand how to serve them the way that they're expecting that they're going to be served.
Yeah. And Jackie, and I think there's a huge, content plays a huge role in that, and then how it shows up on the menu board. So totally agree with everything you're saying, Jackie. I think one of the things, as we think about laying things out, it's designing with consistency. And so organizing the categories in a consistent place so the guest knows what to look for and where to look for it. I also think there's a tendency to need or want to show too many details. And in the drive-thru, it's important to not overwhelm the guest with unnecessary details. It's just the facts. And if there's too much to see, the guest really doesn't see anything. And so understanding what the necessary product details are for them to buy. We like to say the drive-thru is a place to buy. It's not a place to shop. Not like interior menu boards, that's shopping because people can stand and look while they're in line. But drive-thru, when they get to the speaker box, it's about giving them and making it easy for them to navigate the board to buy. And then small things, design elements like font and color and size of the images and things like that, that also can help guide navigation and selection. So there's a lot of things from a content and creative standpoint that we can do to help all of that, to make sure the guest has the confidence with their order, making sure that the crew is getting the order correctly, getting the order correct, and then getting people through the drive-through quickly.
Yeah, and I think if you look at, you know, what has happened with the whole pandemic and the essentially forcing most of the QSR's business through the drive-through, you can see the symptoms that the drive-through is not built for the throughput. I mean, routinely you go to a QSR and what do you have? You have this massive line, you have a digital menu board, and then what else do you have? You have one or two employees out there with a tablet taking people's order in the line. So it's like they've got this digital menu board, but essentially they've said, it doesn't work. We've got to send employees out to the line to take orders. So I think that's a real symptom of people not looking at what the drive-through needs to have from an efficiency and throughput point of view, because they're able to fulfill the orders. It's not that the restaurant can't fulfill the orders. It's that their throughput on the menu ordering, the ordering system to get the orders in and process them are broken. So I think those all represent great opportunities to take employees out of the parking lot and put them inside to focus on the experience of getting your food rather than being out in the parking lot taking orders and adding extra costs to your drive-through.
Dana, yeah. How much more complicated is it? A burger is one thing. You say no pickles, no onions, something like that. You get into something like a Chipotle or those kinds of restaurants where you walk along and you say, I want some of those, I want some of those, I want some of that, I want those. How do you do that in a drive-through efficiently that doesn't just slow things down and complicate matters?
Well, Chipotle has a really interesting approach to this, right? I think what they've been really emphasizing in their new store models is when they do put a drive-through lane in, they call it the Chipotle lane. It's very cute. It's mobile ordering only, right? So it's making the assumption that the customer has actually ordered ahead and it just is fulfilling a pickup function. And I do think when customers are picky or very specific and want a lot of customizations, there's a ton of evidence to support that getting them to engage in a digital interaction like a kiosk or our mobile app or even web ordering is much more successful because they have more time. They have a feeling of time, right? So that's where customers are really thinking about what are all the things they want to do to their order. Traditional drive-through, a person trying to yell through a squawk box at a crew member is not the most productive way to try to accomplish that.
But how easy is it today? Is there the technology that if I drive into a drive-through that it can recognize me and say, hey, Robert, nice to see you back.
Again,
right? You ordered this the last time. What would you like? Maybe you'd like this.
100% yes. And I think it's two parts, right? The one part is for the customers who have mobile ordered ahead, how do you support them retrieving their food in a way that's a good experience? I think the way that that digital menu boards are used today do not support that because the digital menu board is really one size fits all. So whether you've ordered ahead or you're about to place your order, you're getting the same experience. With if you think about that from both a brand and customer perspective, that makes almost no sense, right? Why wouldn't you want to market to me differently if you know what I ordered and that I've already ordered ahead, right? That becomes a different opportunity to engage with me. But the second part, what Robert's saying, I think is really interesting. Once you start to get more sophisticated and do have customer identification, which is possible to Robert's point, that deeper integration to, customer profiles can enable the kind of thing that you're talking about, where I know that last time you were here, you ordered the burrito with carne asada and, extra guacamole, no sour cream. Like there's no reason why you couldn't make that easy for a customer to see that you remember, you know what they ordered last time and reorder it, but it requires a lot of sophistication, right? It requires the integration to the menu board. It requires the customer profile purchase history. It requires, to do it right, integration with the point of sale, right? Because you want the customer to be able to say, I want my burrito, right? And have the crew member be able to press one button and get my burrito for Robert, right? Not having to then type everything into the point of sale.
Right. And so I think
Jeff's
one of the things.
Roadmap.
What was that?
I said to your point earlier, it's a roadmap.
Exactly. And I think if you look at it today, the drive-through lane is is accomplishing both new orders and mobile orders. And a mobile order experience, just for me personally, is just annoying. It's like, okay, I've already mobile ordered. I want to go through the drive-thru to pick up my order, but I've got to go through the same line to get my order for drive-thru. Now, some of them have different places. Oh, go drive up to pick up your order, but I just want to drive through. So what happens now, I look at it and say, why should I even mobile order, right? Because I'm going to sit in the same line. I'm going to go through the same order kiosk. Why don't I just order there? Which is the big disincentive you don't want to have. You want to encourage mobile ordering because that increases efficiency. But the current drive-through does not really accommodate that. There's very few people. They're starting to of looking at, hey, here's your mobile order pickup line, and here's your mobile order and pickup line. I mean, I not mobile, the drive-through order, which is, I think, something that needs to evolve.
That's one of the things that was interesting in a lot of the store prototypes that came out in 2020. You look at McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, Taco Bell, you know, they're really in the prototypes moving to dual lane as a minimum. Some are even triple lane drive-thrus, and they are siphoning customer groups out. So there's either a dedicated mobile order ahead lane, right, where it's just mobile order retrieval, or delivery drivers are being pulled out. Because that's the other thing we're not even talking about is if you're using your drive-thru as your Uber Eats pickup, you know, all your delivery drivers are coming through, and that's where that fulfillment is happening. Now you're slowing customers down. They can't get their food because the delivery drivers are clogging it up. So it's thinking about how do you rationalize that traffic flow and the split between your different fulfillment channels that are actually going through the same physical space in the drive-thru.
One thing we haven't talked about is, although Jackie alluded to it, is what all is involved in adding drive-through, because it's not just a simple case of, yeah, we'll just add a drive-through lane. I mean, obviously there's the budget, but there's like zoning approvals. It's a construction project. Is the lot even big enough? You know, all those things. This is a substantial project, right?
Yes.
There's a ton of aspects in it. And you know, everything from zoning to do you have the physical space? And I think that's where if you look at today, a lot of the new QSRs are changing the footprint of the restaurants. They're changing the physical form factor to make the actual restaurant and inside much smaller, and this focus on drive-through and mobile order pickup. So I think you're seeing an evolution. But, you know, historically, most of these restaurants had a lot of inside dining space. And what they've seen is during the pandemic, and most people are predicting this to continue in this direction, is a lot less people dining in QSRs. And so what you're seeing is the concepts are changing. But to your point, it's a big deal as you try to retrofit this. I mean, changing the size of a building that's already there is a incredibly expensive exercise. So, but I think you will see over time, the restaurant format's going to change. The footprint is going to change, and it's really going to be optimized for people in their cars grabbing food.
We've even begun working with some pretty big names where the franchisees are closing the indoor dining space and putting their investment and focusing just on the drive-thru because they're seeing so much more return coming in through that drive-thru lane. I had a question actually for Dana, because this is actually something that we deal with a lot. So sorry to change the subject on it, but because it came to a point that you said before about simplifying the menu, but if I've got a big menu, I sell everything all the time. How can I display that on a smaller screen format? How can that be effective?
It's a great question. And another benefit of digital menu boards. One, and I'll go back to something Jackie said, data is super critical. So it comes down to what we like to call ruthless exclusion. Like, you got to pick the items that are going to be your top sellers, right? The ones that are going to, one, and from a guest standpoint, average weekly sales, you know, things like that. But also from an operational standpoint, the things that are easy for the crew to make, things that are going to make you the most money. Like, those are decisions that all go into what shows up on a menu board. And day parting plays a role too. And so with a digital menu board and the right data, you can take a look at, depending on what, if you're a Starbucks or a Dunkin', like, this is my drive time, you know, rush in the morning. Here's the key items that are selling. And then in the afternoon, it's snacking time. And it's that, you know, I need that 3 p.m. espresso. And so, and maybe more of like the sweet drink. So these are the drinks that show up in the afternoon. So all of those things allow for the guest, allow for the operator to put the right items on the board to make the guest happy. It can also be local choices as well. And so depending on what market you're in, and if you have, you know, all of those things, and all of those things change, and the data can help inform what shows up on a board. But it also comes back to, you know, there's other little things you can do, maybe eliminating the smalls on a board. So you're just showing medium and large beverages, or, you know, adjusting sizes of the product images that you're showing. There's a lot of things you can do to put a lot of stuff on a board, but there's that always that fine balance of too much, and it's not going to be effective. And so you have to walk the line there between the right items on the board and making sure that there's the complete or almost complete assortment of items.
Yeah. I think to your point earlier, the drive-through is a purchasing place, not a shopping place. So if it improves the drive-through efficiency to only show 30% of your menu items, do that. If someone's coming up to the drive-through and they're shopping, you want them to shop the top 30% of the items. Go for that. But if you're a customer that knows what you want, that is from the more extensive menu, of course you can always order that. But you really don't want people shopping the, you know, kind of what I would call the long tail of menu items.
And I think also one of the things, I just did a big survey of what's in drive-thrus right now. Another thing to keep an eye on is just like the POP and other merchandising that's happening in the lane. I think what's really interesting is, and this is common across many, many brands, where you see it's like they have the menu board, but then they have side wings, they have toppers, they have things that they've stuck on the bottom, they have yard signs, right? And it's like this proliferation of messaging. And I've even seen examples where, I won't name names, but where they have a digital menu board, but then they have 75 yard signs and the window clings are in view, you know, so they're overcomplicating the customer experience, but with all this POP. So I think it's really important to think about, Dana made a great point, customers are only there for 10 to 15 seconds, right? And so you really need to, as the brand, figure out how to curate the messages that you're giving to your customer so that they can absorb it. That helps them feel reassurance. If they see 95 things, but they know they didn't read them all, that instills fear of missing out, right? Because maybe there was something really good I didn't see. So the more that you can reduce that, make it really clear what the path to decision is, the better you are. But use data and analytics to figure out how you curate. Right. I think that's really important.
Just a reminder that we have a Q&A function here. So if you want to throw some questions up here, we can get to those pretty shortly. I'm curious about what the build is for a typical outdoor display. What all do you need? And are there kind of minimum specs that are required, Robert?
Well, you know, it kind of gets into a little bit of the configuration of what they're trying to do in the drive-through. What we see, I think that works the best is using a pre-order board or a pre-sell board that would be where cars would be waiting. And this could be a single 55-inch display that would talk about what the limited time offer is, talk about maybe in that day part, what is going to be the top seller, what they're trying to push, and just create some ideas of what may be available, maybe introduction of new items. At the order point, you have a couple options. You know, typically static menu boards are pretty big because they've got to cover a lot of the day parts or a lot of the menu items. But we've seen using two 55-inch outdoor LCDs works really well, probably 6 feet or so away from that order point, that allow them to have a combination of text and video to be able to see what the menu is and maybe drive that experience, customized hopefully for the day part. And we've also seen some customers use a single display right at the order point, tied in with the audio, the microphone and speaker, and possibly even the camera. And that would be closer to the driver. That could be a 46-inch. You have fewer options to show a lot of detail, but you can also focus on showing a lot of those LTOs or other products. So you can combine it a little bit, possibly even with some kind of a static menu board if they didn't want to go out and replace that. What we see from a configuration or a development point of view is you can put in a drive-through pretty quickly. Typically, we'll see these done overnight, so you're not impacting the drive-through itself. And it typically involves two steps. So after you've gone out and done the site survey to see how you're going to connect it, typically requires power and data. And data now can be wireless. Jeff's company, BrightSign, just announced a new wireless module that we're looking to deploy in a couple of instances. Simplifies the whole aspect of connecting. You don't have to run a big trench. Some older installations, by the way, you know, we found you'd have to dig through an asphalt parking lot, which is now some kind of a garden, and it increases the cost tremendously. You'll go in and pour maybe concrete on one day, and the next day after it cures, you'll come in and just drop the installation on, hook up the data and power, and you're good to go. And having, you know, the CMS, the software already set up, you'll be able to start displaying images live right off the bat.
You have to at times think about some fairly crazy things, like if you're supplying something to Southern Florida, the anchors that are in the drive-through lane in the concrete, it's got to be hurricane-proofed, right?
Sometimes that concrete will go down 5 feet to provide that anchor to be windless. And you'll have a physical engineer have to be able to provide wind load calculations so you don't have a flying drive-through. The bigger issue we see are people driving through with big trailers, not realizing when they're turning around the display is maybe wiping out the display. So we typically recommend having big bollards in the front, so at least you'll wreck a pole versus the display.
Like, there are kind of four main things. I think when you think about buying hardware, it gets really complicated really fast, because I love Robert, but he's a freaking nerd, right? He starts talking about nit and, you know, bezel depth and like all this crazy stuff that for, you know, laymen, it's very hard to understand. I think you want to understand temperature range, like where are your stores located? What's the max and min you need to support comfortably? So temperature is important. Brightness is super important, because if you go through all the effort of putting a screen in, but it's not bright enough for your customers to see, you just wasted your time, right? So making sure that you're using high quality commercial displays with super brightness. And ideally, you know, like the newer screens have sensors that can adjust the brightness. So you can get ultra bright during the day when it's full sunlight, but it can dim down at night, so you're not blinding your customers, right? So there's brightness, there's temperature, there's water, right? And to your point, Dave, like hurricane, you want to make sure your unit is waterproof so that you don't have water on electronics. That's not hard to understand. That's a bad thing.
And vandalism.
And vandalism. Yes, you got it, Dave. Vandalism and damage, right? So to Robert's point, you have the trailers hitting it, or you have people coming and spray painting it, tagging your displays. How are you going to clean those? Right? And don't tell me you're scrubbing like a Brillo pad. Like, I know they do a Taco Bell on their backlets.
And I think it's also important to stress that when you talk about temperature, if you're in Phoenix or Las Vegas or something like that, or Florida, you know it's hot. You're going to need something that's going to require that thermal handling. But you have to think about that in Bangor, Maine as well, right? Or even Alaska, like full sunlight all day long, even if it's not a particularly hot area, it's still going to bake that display, right, Robert?
Yeah, we like to say that the worst condition for an LCD is facing west with a clear look out to the west, so that as that sun is coming down, you're getting a full 90 degree impact by that solar radiation. We call it the solar load. And with high ambient temperatures, that can increase the front of the screen by, you know, 50 degrees. Mm-hmm. And you know, Jackie's right. I am a nerd and I love talking about cool things. One of those is something that we do on all of our outdoor displays, which is we optically bond the front glass to the LCD itself using an optically clear material. And that does two things. You don't need to have as bright of an LCD, so you have power savings, but you achieve the same contrast. You see that you achieve the same viewability, but it also keeps the front of that screen cool, because some screens in those conditions with the full sun on there can actually burn your finger within a second of touching it. Now, you wouldn't think you'd have to touch the front of the display in the drive through, but we may be coming into, you know, an era where we may have some touchscreen kiosks or something like that, where somebody would just pass by, like the people out in the drive through touching the display. But that's really important. So that we look at where the display is facing. Is it facing west? And we take that into consideration, and our displays are designed to be very intelligent. It won't allow the display to overheat. They're essentially heaters, which why it's easier to use them in the wintertime than it is in the heat of the summer. But they're meant to last even in 120 degree temperatures in Phoenix with the direct sunlight.
Someone, excuse me, mentioned earlier very sophisticated software, sophisticated platforms to do predictive selling, suggestive selling in the drive-through lane. And how McDonald's probably has the most sophisticated platform out there. They bought an Israeli company called Dynamic Yield, and they're doing computer vision and loyalty and everything else right in the drive-through and dynamically optimizing the menu customer by customer by customer. And they're seeing results out of that. But that's very sophisticated stuff. I'm curious, is that something that's always going to be something McDonald's and the very largest guys do, or will it be somewhat democratized to a point where, you know, a small regional operator or even a somebody with just two locations in one city could do this sort of thing?
Yeah, I think there will be some democratization. I think it's partially thinking about how you define the capability, right? So suggestive selling is one huge piece. And I think that even using simple rule-based recommendations, you can get some lift. Right. It won't be the same as personalized recommendations, but you'll see some benefit, and that's an opportunity.
So what do you mean by that? Just sorry to interrupt you. Just so for the non-nerds.
Sorry.
Like Robert. with rules based, it's if this happens, do this versus machine learning and AI, where there's a lot more going on that may make those decisions.
That's exactly right. So you can make a decision that, you know, the old joke, like, do you want fries with that? Instead of counting on your crew to do that upsell, if the customer adds an entree, not a meal, you show them fries and a drink, right? Or if it's dinner time, you show them a dessert, because you know that customers are more likely to buy dessert during that day part. So I think with, you know, if you take into account just a few, you know, scenarios, that can help you with a level of interactivity and surprising your customer. The other piece to think about is just like the curation. So we were talking earlier, Dana was talking about, you know, the need to limit the amount you show on your menu. I think there's a lot of democratization around analytics capabilities. So the thing for brands to work on it of any size is, how do you make sure that you're getting some data out of your displays so you understand what's going on and can relate that to your transaction data? Like, that's a very important piece. And you don't need a $300 million Israeli company to do that.
If you got that money.
And I think the other thing to add to that, it's just, again, simple. If you have a digital menu board and you have your order confirmation screen, it's thinking about what goes around that order confirmation screen. Maybe your sides go right next to that. Maybe your desserts go on top of that. So you're almost suggesting with just the layout. So you don't need the technology or anything, but just where you're placing the menu options around your order confirmation screen, where the guest's eyes are, it's as they see their order pop up. Ooh, wait, I want some tater tots, or ooh, wait, I want that chocolate shake. So just by simple layout of a menu, you can also start to create that suggestive sell without all the technology.
Which is probably important because it's something you can grow into, right?
Absolutely.
For sure. Yep.
I think, you know, to that growing into things, if we think about putting in these platforms, as these technologies become democratized or otherwise known as commoditized, you can roll those into your platform. And that's the key to putting in an installation and a platform that can grow over time. So as these technologies come down in cost, you can roll them in and get the benefits of it versus putting in a system that's just right at the limit. And now as these new technologies come, you can't add it. So even though the technology cost came down, your platform doesn't support it. So you end up not taking advantage of some of the new technologies that come out.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.